This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
Welcome to a Rugby Pod special. My name is Laura Winter, and I am joined by two England superstars in Jess Breach and Ellie Kildon to preview the upcoming Women's Six Nations and get all the latest from camp and the world of women's rugby. So welcome both. You're both back in the England squad for the Six Nations. You're also both on the cover, though, of Rugby World magazine this month. And Ellie, you've brought your own camera in here, actually, so we're going to get plenty of behind-the-scenes snaps of our conversation here. You also are part of the shoot, not just as one of the stars, but photographing Jess as well. Talk me through it.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, I would have liked a little bit more time than 15 minutes to run around the Twickenham. We ended up in a boiler room at one point. I got lost on the way there, left the girls, and just use my creative eye to find different ways of showing rugby. And yes, on pitch we're fierce, but off pitch we're fierce as well, just in a different light. And it was really good, having Jess there as someone that I bounce off anyway. But I think, we're all pretty girls, and on pitch it doesn't always look like that when your hair's everywhere, you've got blood coming down, you're sweating. So yeah, it was just a really good opportunity to just do something that I love off pitch.
Yeah, I wouldn't say the boiler room was my favourite part. Ellie kept going, lean on that, go on that, and I was like, it's dusty and I don't know what it's going to do.
There were signs up saying, do not touch, caution.
Do not enter.
Yeah. I was like, lean on that, you'll be fine. She said, no, I'm not leaning.
Risk of death.
I was like, if something happens, my hair already looks like I've been electrocuted. So come on, I'll just do it. So yeah, it was really good fun.
You both made your debuts on the same day as well. I love this. Versus Canada in 2017. But Jess, didn't the debutantes make a promise to each other that day?
Yeah, we did. What was that, Ellie?
And everyone's broken this, haven't they?
Yeah, apart from Ellie, on the spot. What was it, Ellie?
I can't remember. What was it?
We all said there was four of us. Oh, yeah. And we'd all kind of grown up or been in the system together. And we said, let's remark this special occasion by all getting a tattoo together.
Yeah,
like,
I love this. Yeah,
we could get the day. We could get a rose.
What wasn't seen then, if you're listening to this, was the look that Jess just gave Ellie.
And yeah, I am still, to date, I'm pretty sure, maybe Hannah has got it, but the only one out of the four that has got the tattoo.
What is the tattoo?
Listen, Jess, we can go after this. We're in London, so we can go.
Yeah, it was the date, but you could have got whatever you want, but I just don't understand how then, I don't know how many years it's been, 4 or 5 years on, we literally decided to then, as another group, get a tattoo out in New Zealand, and it took us a day to decide, and then bam, the next day we got it. So you obviously have changed a lot in that 4 years.
I needed a few years on me. I was still very young at the time, and I hope
mummy's pressure.
I hope my mum's not listening to this. But
oh, does she not know you've got tattoos?
No, she knows I've got. She knows.
Does.
But I wouldn't say
a
she
tattoo.
Approved.
Okay.
So at the time,
Ellie, you're joking. You're joking.
Ellie, you're joking. God, what have I grown? What
no,
have
we're
you
being
grown?
Serious, Alison. We're being serious. You clearly owe Jess a tattoo.
Yeah, well, listen, we've got a camp ahead of us, so I'm sure we'll find somewhere to get
maybe a forfeit tattoo. For having waited so long as well.
Yeah, maybe.
An interest tattoo. Yeah. We'll go back to the debut though. Jess.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
No, that's okay. Ellie did warn me that this was going to go off in crazy
tangents.
Directions. Yeah. You probably had the greatest debut in the history of rugby. Scored 6 tries and another 5 tries in your second appearance. No one has ever done that in the history of men's or women's rugby. Does that still feel surreal, unreal, incredible to you to think of?
Because I haven't kept up with that record.
I was going to say,
off
big.
Yeah.
It's a high standard to set from the out.
I think when people mention it, like you did, it does take me back and I am like, whoa, that's crazy. Like, to think that I had the ability and the team put me in the position to score 6 on my debut and then, yeah, 5 at Twickenham. But I think you remember bits of it every so often of the game and, like, obviously still being friends with, like, Ellie and Zoe and, like, those moments, like, I'll cherish and I'm sure, like, Elle will do the same, that it's just, like, amazing. And, like, my family were there, my friends were there. And, yeah, to score 6... like you say, I don't think about the number. I just think about the moment. And, like, I always dreamt of playing for England and then to be able to score 6 tries is what I want to do as a winger, let alone score 6. Like, it's just crazy. Yeah. I remember there was one time you were, like, next to me or something and you were, like, shouting. I think it was the crossfield kick or something. Mm. Like,
get another one. I'll get you 7.
And there was one, like, in at Twickenham, when I scored the 5 and I was so tired. I was so tired. And I think I just literally put the ball back inside because I think you scored there. So it's like really cute picture of us that I'm like, Ellie's like standing and my legs are like wrapped round her or the other way around. I can't remember. But I was so tired. And I was like, you know what? You can have this one.
I needed it. And I'd just been yellow carded. So I needed it. I was like, if I don't do this, I'm never playing at Twickenham ever again.
I always admire the way athletes can recount memories of things as well, those like key moments in your career, the way you both just have. I always find that quite fascinating to listen to. You can visibly see you guys going back in time to it. In those debuts, though, I'd imagine there was an initiation for you both.
It's a song, isn't it?
So the England's men team, they have to have a drink. With, yes. I'd imagine they do a lot else. I don't. Maybe some things that we can't say on this pod, but a drink with every member of the squad after their debut, which sounds like a lot of drinks.
A drink with every member of the squad. Is it a choice? That is in, like, to say, I would choose the drink that you would have. That would be good.
I don't know. Initiations don't ever sound like something that people choose.
They don't really do initiations at England level. I mean, we do a song on the bus where you've got to pick a song. I mean, you've got to guess a song that no one else has sung. Otherwise, you've got Amy Cocaine yapping away. And that's kind of the only thing we do. The initiations are kind of through like club level because you can get away with way more.
Do you remember, I don't know if your room did get tipped upside down, but so after that night out, after the final game, we then like all went out. So you kind of left your room on the latch. So like everyone would just come in, like there was no like real like locked door policy. And me and Zoe got back and our room had been tipped upside down. Our mattresses were everywhere, the duvet was everywhere, our bags were like, and I was like, so we've been robbed. And then she was like, no we haven't. And I was like, no, we've been robbed. And my teddy bear, I mean, I have lost him to the day now, RIP doggy, but he was hung by his paws on a hanger with the little clips just hung there like this.
Oh my God, who did
and
this?
And also, my poor Teddy. I've had him since I was birth.
Who's your guest that did
I
that?
Think it was Poppy Clear. I do think it was Poppy
Clear. Do you still not know?
No. Wow. But I do like say I've had it. I have said it to her, and she like giggles. She's like, "You'll never find out." But that will always like it was just not that was initiation, but like I do feel like I was like, right, okay, we're in now.
The Six Nations starts in a couple of weeks. How are the emotions ahead of it? Talk me through the preparation. How you girls are feeling?
Yeah, good. We had one camp at the end of January, which was quite like fitness based, bit of testing. Which everyone loved. And then, we had camp last week, which was good. Like, good to get back together, like, run our shape and some new things. And then, we got camp tomorrow for 4 days.
And then it's game week.
Yeah, and then it's game week,
so
really.
It sounds really quick, and it to be fair, it is quick.
Like, comes up quickly.
We were learning like, all these line-up moves, and I was like, oh, my word, I'm going to have to find a way of remembering this. Yeah. It's so, like, in from club into international. It's really hard to get... you know, the balance, and then we all played a game in the weekend, so then you have to flick back to what the moves are. I forgot all of our moves. I was like, I have no idea. But I think what happens with Six Nations, it happened last Six Nations as well. It feels really quick, but you get together really quickly, and as soon as you're into the flow of it, it takes its own mould, and we end up like playing in a way that we perform really well, and you're not necessarily thinking so much, it's a new shape, it's a new move. It just marries up. And I think it helps from being obviously a professional athlete, but also being in such a tight-knit group that we all know our strengths and we've played a long time together. So it always finds its way. And, you know, with there's some big matches coming up and the internationally, it's getting harder and harder. It's not necessarily going back to Jess's debut, like, teams are getting better, defences are getting more and more fierce. I mean, you look at the Canada game in the World Cup, and that was like next level. That could have been a final. We always talk about like keeping the gap and growing the gap. We've got this edge on people, but if we stop where we are, they're just going to close that gap. So we need to keep on pushing on so that gap remains the same, because, you know, we've got a World Cup coming up in 2025, and we want to keep that gap so that we can do better than we did in the last one. So yeah, it's all part of it, really.
And a home one as well, so yeah, pressure's on. I don't want to make things more awkward after the whole tattoo thing, but Jess, you have been playing fullback for Saracens. Obviously, usually you're on the wing, as you said earlier. Does this mean we're going to have some sort of competition for the 15 shirt for England?
Well,
what scoop can you give us here?
Go on, Ellie, give me some shade. Go on.
So,
go on, gal.
Is there any shade? No, there's no shade. I think we both offer different things.
Yeah,
we both offer different things, and you know, it's a beauty that we've got players that can all play in different positions and go across the team. There's so many different players, and you can have a completely different back line depending on who we're coming against. So we don't see it as like competition. I don't see it as competition. It's more just, it's good. We are blessed with the players that we've got, that we can play multi positions, because it means that there's always another option or opportunity to beat the team that we're against. We are in a team sport, so there's going to be times that it is going to be better that Jess plays fullback. There's going to be times that it's better that I play fullback. So, yeah, I don't have any shade.
Yeah, no, I think last year, obviously joining Saris, did not expect to play fullback at all, and then just sort of slotted in there, and then, yeah, kicked off from there, really. I've really enjoyed it. I think, you know, Ellie might say it, but I think it's grown my game a lot, like massively. And I've enjoyed it. Like, I can see how Ellie has so much fun back there. And control as well. You get to shout at people and they can't really answer back at you because they're kind of like in the moment.
Backseat. Yeah.
But no, I think, you know, internationally, and I think for England, I'm probably not maybe ready yet to play there. And I've just enjoyed my time playing there at Saris, and hopefully be able to play there towards the end of the season as well. But yeah, probably going to focus maybe a bit more on the wing.
I think as well, I've dabbled on the wing here and there, not at an international level, but it makes you appreciate the other position. So, you know, having someone who's played fullback and then is a winger for me, they can appreciate the work that I do. Yeah. And also, if I get tired and I'm like, girl, you go, she can cover where I am whilst I hang on the wing, and vice versa. So, yeah, I think it's a good thing that we're able to play different positions, and Jess is thriving at the fullback position, as long as you don't thrive too much.
Thrive within the limits.
but it's good, and it creates healthy competition. Yeah. You know, the better Jess gets, the better I've got to get if I want to keep that shirt.
Yeah, for sure.
And yeah, I just think it's really good that, you know, people are picking up different skills. And look at Jess's kicking game. Before playing at Saris this season, I barely saw a kick, or no offence, kick very well. Whereas now she's nearly hitting 50-22s. Have you got a few 50-22s?
No, that was 5 metres.
That's
out
what I mean. And that's brilliant. And it just shows what, you know, the transfer of skills can do, because we can zip the ball to Jess on the edge now, and she's going to kick it and chase after it.
You
herself.
Don't know what I'm going to do.
I don't know what she's going to do.
Love that.
Exactly.
Speaking of excellent players within the England squad, World Player Rugby of the Year, winning captain. She's won pretty much everything there is to win. Marley Packer, likely to reach a century of caps on the opening weekend. Can you give us an insight into what makes her such an incredible player and person as well, on and off the field?
I hate this word, but I love actually using it to describe it. It's that dog. Like, she,
I wasn't expecting
yeah, the dog in her to, like, she does everything. Like, she carries hard, she turns the ball over, she makes massive hits, she, you know, she orchestrates people, and she tells you if you put her in the wrong position sometimes as well. But she just does that dirty work. I mean, if you actually watch her and how her hair is everywhere as soon as she's gone into the first tackle,
hate her.
Yeah, then it probably compliment like the work that she does on the pitch massively, because yeah, she's a great leader on pitch, but off pitch as well. I don't view her as, this is my captain I'm speaking to. It's like a friend.
She's taken the captaincy her own. Like, she hasn't just, you know, kept on maybe what Sunster's doing, which worked for her and worked for us as a team. And I think that's really nice to see that she's grown. Yeah, grown into that, like, captaincy and been like, this is how I'm going to lead the Red Roses. Sure. And this is how I'm going to do it off the pitch, and this is how I'm going to do it on the pitch. And I think that's really important that she hasn't just, you know, just carried on the way that it was. Not that that wasn't right, but she's just made it her way. And I think that's really good. And it shows character, and I think it shows leadership, which I think she has abundance of, especially, you know, being at Sarri's with her on the regular. Like, she has that loads there as well.
You mentioned character. Let's delve into some of the characters within the England squad. Who do you think is the funniest?
Bar, obviously, us two.
Bringing up the mood, causing a bit of trouble.
Yeah,
I'd definitely say Meg Jones. You know, she's energy, and she'll steal the room as soon as she walks into it. Like we spoke about the song, she on their group's song, she was actually sat with those guys watching. I forgot that she was in that group, and when it came to a certain bit, stood up, arms in the air, singing to everybody. And she again is a fantastic leader. She's done loads in the sevens in that captaincy role and leading, and she's brought that straight into the 15 setup. And you know, you can just tell she's happy, and she wants the best from everyone around her, but she does it in her own way. She is just so quick, and just, she's a cheeky little beep, but I've got so much time for her, because I look up to her off pitch. I'm on pitch, because we've got like this almost like brotherhood, but also like I respect her as a player as well. So you have fun with her, but also she leads by example all the time.
Her standards are so high, but she knows when to switch off, which I think just shows
it's so important,
the good character that she is.
I love that. Look, England have won the last 5 championships in a row in the Six Nations. Who's the biggest threat to you guys this season? And is it France? Generally, we're looking at France, aren't we, here?
The France game's always the biggie. They're such a strong team.
Away as well.
Away at France is a big match.
It's huge,
it's
isn't
sick,
it?
Though. Yeah, it's so good.
Like, the crowd are all going at you. It's honestly...
A French crowd is one of the most
wild.
Hostile you will hear. But in a way that is somewhat charming to a degree. It's never, you know, hostile in any other sense of the word, but it is... I can't imagine the intensity of playing a French side in France.
Yeah,
two years ago they chased us in, didn't they?
Yeah.
They chased us into the changing room. 2 years ago we played them in Bayonne, like near Biarritz, Bordeaux. And we both finished our warm-ups. We were like the further end of the pitch and they were closer to like the changing rooms. And we'd like done, so we were like kind of like walking in. And then I think we kind of got a bit of a jog on. And then they got a bit of a jog on. And then it was like...
Everyone together.
Everyone in
and
the tunnel.
It was like a single tunnel. It wasn't a double tunnel. It was a single tunnel.
And everyone was like
barging each other.
It was like, it hasn't even started.
It was crazy.
And it was like, who can get into their change room the quickest?
Yeah.
And everyone in the change room was like, they've just chased us in. Yeah. They're beep, 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 beep.
And the best thing about it was just silence in that crowd.
Yeah.
Obviously, we won the game, which helps, but... The crowd was electric at the start, and we had people like pointing you out, saying your name, and sticking their fingers up at you.
No way.
And our friends and family had a tiny little corner.
Yeah, bless
like,
them.
Right up in bless the corner, with little English flags and stuff. But then the rest of it was French. And
that's incredible, isn't it?
But then by the game ending, we had French people asking for our shirts.
Yeah.
And I thought,
now
you want in it. But yeah, no, it's always incredible playing against them, home or away. You look at the game that we played against them last Six Nations at home. We had such an amazing crowd there, and I think that set the standard. So the French do it well. So I'm expecting big things when we go out there, definitely.
I do think that a lot of the teams, like Ellie said, before in the pod about the gap, I do think, you know, they are chasing us, and I do think they're getting better. And I think, you know, a Welsh team, they always come at us in the first half. Like, it is a challenge. And I think, you know, going down to Ashton Gate, like on the border, like, I think that crowd will be pretty epic. Like, I think, you know, it will feel like a home game for us, but I think it probably
will feel like a home game
for them. Yeah. And I think that will be a really exciting fixture for us as well. I think they always bring it to us. There's always that, like,
I know.
Dog.
And we all know all the players. Like, a lot of the Welsh girls play in the English Prem.
Mm-hmm.
So you know a lot of them, yeah. So and they know you, so you can't just throw something out the bag, because I've probably seen it last weekend when you played against them. So it's really good, because we're friends with them, we're enemies with them when we're on the pitch, and like the Welsh are so patriotic anyway, that the pride that they have to pull on the shirt definitely comes when you play against them as well. So I think, like Jess is saying, that the gap is closing. We need to make sure we keep that gap, but everyone is catching up. So I think every game is going to be a step up from last year. And we don't know what teams are going to bring. Obviously, the first game is against Italy, but we have no idea what they're going to bring. So it's just about how well we can prepare ourselves to keep that gap, even though you don't know what the gap is. So, yeah, you've got to just kind of focus on yourself and just know that there's big games coming up. And as long as you put the work in, and obviously we take our notes in meetings and stuff, we'll be fine.
You mentioned the gap, and I know you don't want that to close. You want to keep ahead of the game. But what do you think can be done to close that gap to some of the other nations? Because I think your average winning margin has been something like 55 points. And, you know, I know it must be an incredible feeling to be winning and to be on top of your game and, you know, dominating in the Six Nations. But equally, I know you'd want the competition to be there as well and the product to benefit from that.
I think, like, you know, we've been professional for 5 years now, maybe. And I think, you know, it took other unions, nations to get professional. And I think you can see their growth, you can see their improvement, and how much the just difference backing them makes, you know, making them full time, making them professional, and not having them to do a 5 a.m. gym session and then go to work and then go to a training session, I think is crucial. And you can just see that development. And I think that is where the gap has closed. I think, you know, more and more teams are becoming professional, so they have more time to put the effort in, to put the work in, to be better, to have the right nutrition, have the right, you know, recovery as well, which I think people don't realise how actually important it is when you aren't professional and you go to the gym, but you're sore, but you have to go to work and like all this stuff. I think actually now those unions and that those teams are able to recover and able to, you know, allow their body to feel rested. And I think for me, that's where the gap has closed. And I think it could still close even more. You know, there's lots of unions that could still make their teams professional, and maybe have, you know, leagues within those countries. You know, like we as the Prem are probably trailblazers. Like the Premiership is phenomenal, and you know, the RFU have done a really good job at making such a good product in that. And I think, you know, players come over to play in our Prem because their league isn't that good. And I think that for me would be phenomenal if the leagues in Canada or America or even Wales, France, you know, were a bit better, so that actually like that could grow their game within their own country. And then it could grow more, I think, for me, is really important.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at like the how many internationals that are not English are in the Prem, I think it benefits us because you get to play against loads of different people that, you know, you wouldn't play against unless it was an international stage. And it just means that, okay, if, let's say, the French fullback came to Quinns, that just means I need to get better if I want to make sure that I'm starting. So as much as I think that's such a great thing, there's no English player that plays in another league outside of it. So we need other unions to put the money in, so that not just so that there's more opportunities for their own, like their own players, but create something that you want the English girls coming over and wanting to look at. Because by doing that, then the English Prem's got to be better. And then it creates that competition and it closes the gap away from the like the international teams. It makes people really strive to be better in loads of different nations.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned the French literally chasing you down the tunnel just to get into your heads ahead of that game. Charlotte Kaslick of Australia recently said the French were the lippiest players. Do you agree with that, or who do you think might be the chirpiest?
I don't understand that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I did
French. They could be saying anything to you.
I know, I did French GCSE and I cheated on it still. So, no, and
I think the Welsh are.
We know them. We know them, so it's always...
You know them so well, I guess.
Yeah, I'd definitely say the French, because not the French, the Welsh, because, they, like I said, they're so proud to be pulling on a Welsh shirt, and we're so proud to be pulling on an English shirt. So at any point you can get at the other team, even if you don't have ball in hand, you go for it.
Yeah, I think as well, maybe in the sevens, the French team are so physical. I mean, they're physical in the 15s, but they are so physical in the sevens. So I'm sure that's probably, you know, what she's also maybe referring to.
Also, you can, probably can get away with being yappy for 14 minutes. But yeah. 80 minutes is a little bit...
Yeah. Get a bit boring.
I'd run out of like,
same chat, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, is that all you've got? Yeah.
Let's go back to the start, if we can, to the start of your careers. I think nowadays it seems so much easier for girls, even women as well, at you know, older ages, to get into rugby, to start playing at clubs. There's far more opportunities out there. I'd imagine back then, certainly back when I was a kid, it was different. For me, at school, it was hockey or netball or dance. Mm. That was it. That was all that was offered. Mm. We didn't have football and we didn't have rugby. Can you share with us how you both got into the sport and how challenging it was for you as a girl? I guess I'd imagine playing with the boys a lot of the time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I think it's the same story in our like age kind of group that, you know, your dad and your brother kind of played. So you just went along. You were sporty kind of anyway. And then, you know, my brother just got annoyed. He was older and he was like, just join your own age group, Jess. Like, come on. So that's what I did really. And I actually just never looked back. Like I joined Chichester Rugby Club at 6. And then, yeah, that was it. Just kept going. But, you know, I did a lot of sports. So I think anything I did do, and I was very competitive and I wanted to beat my brother, where Ellie's a bit different. She's got a younger brother, so she probably just wanted to keep being better than him, but I wanted to be better than my brother. And we did everything together, every sport together. So I think, yeah, that's how I got into it. And because me and my mum would just go on a Saturday to watch my dad, I was just like, you know what, I'll just give it a try.
Might as well. For me, I grew up in quite a rural area, so I was once playing out with my neighbours, like two boys, and they were going to rugby training, so if I didn't go with them, I would be sat on my tod. And I just didn't want to do that, so I went along with them, and I loved it ever since. And yeah, you're going to get, you know, people say, oh, there's the girl or whatever, but don't know about...
Yeah, run at me, go on.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved it. I loved the pressure, and I love that they were turning their heads before we even touched the ball. So that is kind of where it started. When very much similar to you, the school that I went to was like no rugby for girls, so... On my first day, they were kind of like, right, at games on a Wednesday, the girls playing netball. And I said, I've never played netball before. I play rugby. And they said, no, you're going to be doing netball. And I said, I don't play netball, play rugby, whatever. Got my coach to come in and say, let her play. So they said, fine, you can go into the B team. We've actually got a game on the first day. And I ended up scoring 3 tries and got straight into the A team. And I actually, the person that got swapped with me was, you know, that one kid. And he's hit puberty at probably about 8 years old. He was the one that got moved down to the B team. So the boys weren't happy with that because we've lost George. He's like, oh man, and we've got this girl. And yeah, and it kind of like went on from there. But I guess in answer to your question, you're always going to come up against like struggles. Even now, like we're professionals, we're the top team in the world. And there still is struggles, but I think you've got to find the thing that keeps you going, because you can't get knocked down by Jerry204 that's put a comment on Instagram. Just got to
Jerry
find...
Jerry204 can...
do one.
Without having to get the producers to put in a lot of beeps, Jerry204 and whoever else with multiple numbers after their name can do one. Yeah, I think it's the polite way to say it.
Exactly.
You try.
Come in
Go
and
on, be my guest. Yeah, come on. Yeah.
And I just think that, like, you know, for anyone listening to the pod, or young girls or boys that are probably going to... Like, this is going to happen. It's going to happen whether you are a girl or boy, whatever age you are. You're probably going to come up against something that makes you think, I really don't want to do this anymore.
In life, in general.
In life, yeah. And you've just got to find that thing inside you which reminds you why you do it. Like, for goodness sake, we literally throw a ball around for a living, and people come to watch us throw a ball about for a living. I've got my best friends in the sport. I get to travel to different places, and... I know I love it. So on the days that I'm wet, someone's just stood on my hand. I'm cold. I've just got to remember those things. So even though when I was younger, it was people saying girls can't play, people still say that now. Yeah. Do I listen to them? No, I don't listen to them, because there's 58,000 other people that think we can play the sport. So I think, yeah, you've just got to keep on going. And that's why we keep on being those trailblazers, to show that we are stronger than just the girls that you see on the rugby pitch. We're strong up here as well. So,
are you?
Nah, I'm getting there.
Oh, you finished yet, actually?
Stop.
Are you finished?
No. Stop it, Jess. What's going on with
Ellie's been doing her degree for about 6 years now, so.
Oh. I've got one module left. I wasn't going to go into it. I've got one module left.
Okay, can we talk about New Zealand? Speaking of being mentally strong. Last year, you guys beat New Zealand in Auckland to win the inaugural Women's 15 competition. But that was revenge, wasn't it, really, for the World Cup final in which England were runners-up. And England rugby, you guys have been runners-up, not you guys, but as a team, runners-up something like six times over the years as well with the two victories. What were the highlights for you both of that final last year, of beating them, how much that meant to you?
I just loved the whole experience. Yeah. I mean, we never saw it as a revenge thing. It was kind of, it's a fresh start. Yeah, it's a nice. New team. They had a new team. You couldn't see it as the same game again. I think what was really good is we had a different style of play. We had new coaches in and, like I said, new players to just showcase what this side can really do and show what is to come and more for 2025. So, you know, you stand against the Haka and I don't find it scary.
There was just no pressure. I think that's what it was. Like the whole tournament, the whole tour of New Zealand, no pressure. Like there was no pressure to win the whole tournament, to win one game, to win all three games. Like there was nothing. And yeah, like, I think I agree, standing against the Haka. I didn't do it at the World Cup, so I don't know how actually that felt. But I think, yeah, I was just a bit like, no, we're...
It's actually sweet.
Yeah, like... Well,
we felt sweet. Like first 20, I was like, we're sweet. Yeah. We're actually okay now.
Obviously, like, it was a game and, you know, they're phenomenal rugby players and they're a phenomenal team. But I think, yeah, we just really gelled together on that tour. It was different. The whole tour, I think, had a different feeling, which I think is exciting, and that we're just going to grow from that and keep getting better. And, you know, hopefully we get to, you know, have it a sixth Grand Slam to our name, you know, come end of April. So, yeah, I think New Zealand was really good and I've got a lot of fond memories of it now, and I think a lot of people have, and I think it's actually quite cool to have gone back and rewrite it, because obviously the World Cup is a big thing, but the whole experience was just different.
Yeah, it was just so enjoyable, and it just shows where in such a short time we'd grown to, but also we left so many things out there that we know that there's so much more to come as well. And
yeah, if you didn't have lax ankle stability, then maybe you would have scored that
two disallowed tries. And I'm like, just wanted to do the celebration.
I know. You still did it, though.
I know. I did it on one, it and then I disallowed try.
Yeah.
And I was
rewind.
My head.
Oh, gosh. Sounds like there was a lot of freedom then in the way you were able to play. Can we take it back, though, to the World Cup final and what you feel looking back now, reflecting on it, what went wrong, perhaps, what didn't quite go right, what the difference was? Was it the pressure, the expectation? Can you put into words the feeling of losing a World Cup final?
Yeah, I don't think we could have done anything more. You know, we got carded pretty early on, but despite that happening, we played incredibly
still in the
well.
Game,
yeah,
you?
Like
you were,
I don't think it actually. I don't think it made that much of a difference, because it just showed two of the top teams in the world going literally head to head. You know, it was probably one of the best games of rugby that anybody will say has happened, men or women's.
I was screaming.
Yeah,
but on the telly,
you know,
watching.
Like the whole game happened, and when we had that line out. We're in the red. I looked up at the clock, so I'm further out. I thought, we're driving this, we're going to be fine. And I literally remember going, Panama. I covered my mouth. I went, we've fucking won it. And then I looked back, and it was getting stolen. And at that point, I just dropped to my knees. And I think it's the best thing that could have happened to us, because if we would have won that, we would have come back. We probably wouldn't have made the learnings that we needed to make. And now we've got an opportunity to write our own fairy tale. Yeah. If we came back, everyone would expect us to win the next World Cup. But what it's done for the game, it's created a competition, and it's created, like I said, this story of who is going to win this World Cup. The gap's, yes, being closed, but we saw what happened in the last World Cup, and there's so much that's going to go on. So, yeah, in terms of the team piece, there's that. I know personally, I got back to the changing room and I wanted to play again. I was like, nah, this is a half time. We need to go out again.
Wow.
But even though I was so tired, I felt like I just wanted to do it again because it was just such an amazing game, despite the ending. But
yeah, the adrenaline probably. The adrenaline, was just running yeah. through you.
The game's going to change, and women—it's the golden era of women's sport, and we're very much part of that. So I'm just excited to see what happens.
Can we touch on that then? Because yes. you're saying it's a golden age for women's sport, and I love that, and I feel it. You know, I've been covering women's sport since 2011, 2012, right? And the media coverage now compared to where we used to be is an amazing leap that we've made. I remember 2012 was this seminal moment for women's sport with so many incredible female athletes winning brilliant gold medals, silver medals, bronze medals. And then you looked at the media coverage, and aside from the Olympic Games, it was something like 2-3%, which is pitiful.
Yeah.
And then that's leapt in recent studies to something around 15%.
Yeah.
But you look at the numbers around, in whether it's participation, whether it's, you know, viewership, whether it's actually bums on seats in stadiums, everything is growing, right? How do we keep this interest? How do we keep growing these audiences? Because I think the 15% shows we've still got 85% to go until we are, probably 50-50, until we are reaching levels towards what male sport is receiving. And equally, I don't think those numbers should be a target or a limit. They should be, okay, how can we keep growing? Yeah. Like you say, growing this gap, the growth should be infinite, right? Well, so where do you think we go from here, Ellie, for you?
I think, you know, I don't like comparing to the men. I think it's a very different product to the men.
100%.
So there's no point saying we want to be where the men are, because ultimately we're a completely different thing. So for me, you look at the research, and everybody that comes to a women's game comes back to a women's game. It's a very different atmosphere to other things, and it's friends and family. It's a day out where you can just enjoy a sport. It doesn't matter who's playing. And I think as long as we keep showing that we can play as rugby, from a rugby point of view, we keep showing how powerful we are as women, and we can inspire other women, but also men as well, and children, and the older generation to get involved in sport one way or another. But I think as well, we need the opportunity to be more than rugby players. And you know, if you don't enjoy rugby, ultimately it doesn't matter. But if you've got an interest in something that I do, it might be you like my hair and you want the opportunity to speak to me about my hair, you're going to have an opportunity by coming to a game, and then you might be like, I actually really like that. So people need to step out of the box. And I'm doing something at the moment and working on a project where it kind of does that. There's no
Plug.
Point, and I don't want to just jump in there, but 5022 Studios. But I want to market the game in a different way, show our personalities, show who we are, because we are rugby players, yes, but we are more than rugby players also. You know, everyone sees us one day a week and think that's the product. But there's six other days that we need to show, and we need to showcase that. And I want to go and get, you know, fashion, art, music, culture come into the games, because I think that's where it'll change it. It'll become almost like trendy to come to a female rugby game. And people at grassroots level and at kids' levels will stop getting bullied for playing rugby. You talk to any of the rugby girls, and there'll be one story, like in whatever form, that there's a negative reason why you're playing. And I'm just sick of hearing it. I'm sick of having to speak to young girls and them saying that they're being bullied because they play rugby, when really, it's really cool. And, we do some really good things as well. So I think that if we can market the game in that way, more bums will come on the seats, and more will be shown on us as not just rugby players, but as powerful women, because we are powerful women, and we're here to make change. And we've got the ability to do that if we've just got that lens that shows people who we are.
Just be different, like be yourself. And I think, going on Ellie's point, that's what I think maybe how the Lionesses has suddenly just like grown, is that, you know, they're a team, but there's lots of individual characters within that team. And I think that's so important. I think that's what maybe we're trying to do as rugby players, is be an individual off the pitch within a team that's like so tight and so successful. And I think, you know, you can see that with Leah Williamson, like with her fashion, and, you know, she's been invited to such different things that actually, you know, previously probably wouldn't have been invited to. And, you know, if people know who she is now, and I think that's so important. And, you know, she is a trailblazer for football and for the Lionesses, and they were so successful at the Euros. And I think that's going to be our time in 2025 at Twickenham, like, just be trailblazers for sport. And I think, you know, we have kicked on from, you know, the World Cup. It was really good and we did get a lot of coverage, you know, and it was sad that we lost. But actually, I agree with Ellie, like, we're going to write our own fairy tale. We're going to write our own story. And who wouldn't want to win a home World Cup? Like, you know, it's going to be incredible. And to think the place that we are now, like, if we had this conversation in a year's time, like, we'll be in a completely different scenario. And then in 6 months' time, we'd be playing a home World Cup, which I just think... It's crazy. It's incredible. And not many people can say they're either going to be a part of that or achieve it. Dupont obviously played in the home World Cup for France. You know, wasn't that what they weren't as successful as maybe they hoped to be. And that has now gone to the sevens program because he wants more. Like, he likes that, like, challenge, and he wants to, you know, play again in a home Olympics. Like, again, who wouldn't want to do that?
Who wouldn't?
100%. I've got goosebumps thinking about a home World Cup and you both writing this story for yourselves and this narrative that you have this opportunity to win on home soil. Mm. It is incredible. Let's leave it there. I think that's a wonderful note to sign this pod off with. Thank you both so much for this conversation. I've loved it. And like you said, Ellie, like you also said, Jess, it's about the characters in the sport, and you two are definitely two brilliant, brilliant characters. So thank you for allowing me to have this conversation with you. I've loved it. Best of luck as well to you and to the wider England squad for the Six Nations. Hopefully we can catch up again, maybe afterwards.
Yeah, that'd be good.
And reflect on it.
That'd be good.
Lovely. Until then, thank you so much to all of you out there for listening. And do make sure you're subscribed on Spotify.